Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy December. It's December 1st, 2022. Good to be with you on this Thursday morning edition of our program. So looking forward to another great discussion. I'm sure it will be based on the many qualifications of our wonderful guest. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is going to be joining us, of course, from EWTN News, The Register, and EWTN News Nightly, and all of our great news programs. And of course, he is. His resume is just way too long to talk about on the air, but suffice it to say, he's an expert in church history. He has numerous books to his name and has done an amazing job on helping us learn more about the faith through various documentaries and specials on EWTN. So this topic we're going to discuss, I mentioned it briefly on Monday when the story came out. The Pope does an interview with America Magazine and talks about a number of issues, including the priesthood. And he doubles down and says, no, women cannot and will not be priests. But he also goes further than that. He talks about the differences and how women have such a beautiful role. And if they would only embrace and understand that role, who they are, made in the image and likeness of God, female and male, right, equal but different, then it makes sense. And you can truly blossom the way God intended. But the problem we have in our world is that everybody wants to be the same. And we know that there's been so much about, oh, male, female, that really doesn't matter. But it does matter. And this is what needs to be explored, because I truly believe if we would just understand and take a breath and stop thinking that the church is trying to deny something to us and really understand what God is trying to do here, then things start to fall into place. I'm just speaking from personal experience, okay, and really embracing the teachings of the church. Really looking forward to the conversation with Dr. Bunsen. And then we're going to be chatting with another expert, and this is Brian Birch, who works so hard on Catholic issues. And we're going to be talking about a very troubling thing that just happened that is going to deeply affect Catholics. The U.S. Senate passing the so-called, quote-unquote, Respect for Marriage Act. Now, whenever the left is trying to do something, they always put it forth as something it isn't. Right? It's just the opposite of what they're trying to do, but they want you to think that they're putting out good things versus what the real truth is. Contains significant threats, this measure, to religious freedom. Brian Birch is a president of Catholic Vote, put out a statement recently saying the Senate, including 12 Republicans, voted to undermine religious freedom and expose Catholics to debilitating lawsuits brought by those who seek to silence our voices in the public square. Those in Congress who dismiss legitimate warnings about this bill and the harms that will be caused by it must be held accountable. The bill was designed from the start as a political weapon for left-wing activist groups to harass and shut down conscientious Americans who hold fast to the time-honored institution of marriage. So what do we do about this? Is it too late? I believe it's never too late. However, what can we do? What it means, though, in the short term, is that now in many cases, and this is what one of the legal experts in the article on CatholicNewsAgency.com said, that we're going to have to be using the courts to defend freedom of religion and freedom of speech, which is not good. Anyway, we'll talk about that with Brian Birch and what we could do about it. You know what, folks? I'm sorry, but elections have consequences. You've got to look at the big picture, and you can't just say, well, I don't like this person, or gee, I don't like this, or I don't like this party. Look at the platforms. Look at the issues. And if you care about your Catholic faith, we have to take this more seriously. All right. Now, I know most of you in the audience are with us on this, but I know a lot of people who identify as Catholic and don't see this as a big deal. They're so into their party politics, one side or the other, that they can't see the forest for trees when it comes to these issues that are going to have such a devastating impact. Alrighty then. So that is a show for today. Dr. Matthew Bunsen and Brian Birch. Just want to thank you for your support over the years. Catholic Connection celebrating 20 years of the program this week, actually. Today would be my actual, or is it tomorrow? I forget if it's the first or the second, but my actual anniversary when I started this program. And we've been syndicated now on EWTN for 15 years. So I'm so grateful for the partnership and the support, obviously, of EWTN to bring Catholic Connection and other programs to you across the country and around the globe, because we're everywhere to you every morning right here on this very program. Alrighty then, there's a ton of news to get through. It is a busy Thursday morning as we start a new month in Advent. It's the first week of Advent, the first week of this season, new liturgical year. Let's see what's happening in and around the country and the world as we take a look at the news on Thursday, December 1st, 2022. Authorities positively identifying Father Otis Young, a local Catholic priest in the Archdiocese of New Orleans, as one of the victims of a double homicide. The coroner's office there saying yesterday the cause of death was sharp and blunt force trauma. The homicide, according to Catholic News Agency, either occurring Sunday night or Monday morning. The New Orleans Archbishop also releasing a statement offering prayers for both Young and Ruth Pratts, who worked closely with him as a church staff member until his retirement earlier this year. He said that she is listed out as a missing person. Catholic News Agency did contact the local police to confirm that Pratts is still listed as missing, but did not hear back by the time of publication. Joan Lewis and I discussed this yesterday, wondering if it might be a possibility in terms of a hacking. And now the Vatican spokesperson is saying that the Holy See has taken down its main Vatican website, Vatican.va, amid an apparent attempt to hack the site. Matteo Bruni telling Reuters on November 30th, technical investigations are now ongoing due to abnormal attempts to access the site. Numerous users online noting the site was unavailable as of yesterday morning, or Tuesday morning, actually, among other things. Vatican.va is the official online site for papal encyclicals. As of yesterday afternoon in the U.S., attempts by Catholic News Agency, meanwhile, to access the website from several different web browsers produced an error message, and other websites such as PressVatican.va were still online as of yesterday. Pope Francis rescheduling his trip to the African countries of the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan for January 31st through February 5th of next year. That came from the Vatican today. The visit was originally due to take place in the beginning of July of this year, but was postponed by the Vatican due to problems with the Holy Father's knee. The 85-year-old Pope apologized in June for having to put off the trip and vowed to reschedule as soon as possible. In Colorado, Pueblo could become the first city there to try to outlaw abortions. Mark Lee Dickinson is a founder of Sanctuary City for the Unborn and is concerned about the problems not only the babies will face, the unborn, but women who are going to get hurt, and he says it could cause them lifelong issues.
And I don't think the hospital wants that, and I sure don't think any of those council members really want a place to come into this community that's actually going to be hurting women.
The Pueblo City Council passing an ordinance during its first reading on Monday. The meeting was attended by a large crowd containing many supporters of the pro-life ordinance. The measure was prompted by an announcement earlier this year that an abortion facility was planning to open. Colorado has passed a law supporting the right to an abortion, and the state attorney general's office has promised to vigorously defend that law against any local restrictions. The ordinance will be discussed again on December 12th and will include public comment. There are still no suspects in the unsolved stabbing deaths, as Trey Thomas reports, of four Idaho college students in November.
While authorities in Moscow continue to ask the public for help, they say they've gotten hundreds of 911 calls. All four students were found dead at a home not far from the University of Idaho. Dozens of local, state, and federal investigators are working the case, calling what happened a targeted attack.
Speaking of those Idaho college students who were fatally killed less than 3 weeks ago, they're being honored with a vigil. University of Idaho students, families, and supporters gathering on campus yesterday to pay their respects.
The circumstances that bring us here tonight, they're terrible. The hardest part, we cannot change the outcome.
Some parents of the victims speaking during the event, telling attendees about the children they lost, a moment of silence held for each of the students, all four found dead at a home not far from campus. And the man accused of killing 10 black people at a Buffalo supermarket in May is expected to plead guilty to state charges today. Authorities insist it was a racially motivated attack. The initial hearing was canceled earlier this month because of recent snowstorms in the Buffalo area. The Michigan Supreme Court pausing the case of parents of the Oxford school shooter. It's ordering the state appeals court to hear an appeal from James and Jennifer Crumbly over whether there is sufficient evidence of causation to have a trial. The case stems from that mass shooting just 1 year ago yesterday when 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly killed four students and injured six others and a teacher at his high school north of Detroit. Three mothers say they plan to sue Airbnb after their adult children died of suspected carbon monoxide poisoning while staying at a rental in Mexico City. Attorney Chris Stewart is representing the victims' family, saying their lawsuit will demand that Airbnb mandate carbon monoxide detectors at all of its properties.
It's a massive problem because they regulate what they want to regulate.
The three Americans were found dead inside a vacation rental after they traveled to Mexico in October. According to the CDC, more than 430 people are accidentally killed by the gas each year in the U.S. Airbnb releasing a statement saying it already offers smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to all eligible hosts and has given away over 200,000 of them. Defense attorneys will present their case today at a Los Angeles criminal court building in the sexual assault trial of Harvey Weinstein, the disgraced movie mogul facing sex-related charges involving four women, including the wife of California Governor Gavin Newsom. The judge overseeing the trial rejected a bid by Weinstein's lawyers to acquit the former Miramax leader of all seven counts. A member of the Medical Board of California speaking out against the board, saying it's failing patients and protecting dangerous doctors. T.J. Watkins demanding legislative action to put the public's interests first.
We preach public protection, but everything we do is doctor protection.
He is now teaming up with patient advocates to create what he calls the Accountability Act, which is a 14-point action plan outlining legislative changes to the board. He points out that patients by law are not allowed to give statements to the board until after their case is decided.
The people that are really hurt, we'll never hear from them. The brave patient advocates and people that call into that medical board, they are the tip of the iceberg.
He describes the changes as protecting the public and reforming this unequal, unjust, and unfair system. Out of about 10,000 patient complaints that are filed every year, only a small fraction of them are actually investigated. Just 1.4% of complaints lead to discipline with probation, and less than half of 1% result in the revocation of a doctor's license. Those investigations usually take between 3 to 4 years to complete, while doctors continue to practice. Air travelers are seeing some delays and cancellations this morning after the end of a long holiday weekend and the long work week began. FlightAware.com is reporting just over 24 cancellations compared to the thousands that were grounded a few days ago, typically one of the busiest travel days of the year. And Penn State scientists say they've made a breakthrough in the mysterious disappearance of the legendary aviator Amelia Earhart. Earhart and her navigator disappeared without a trace over the Pacific Ocean back in 1937 during her attempt to become the first woman to fly around the world. Now, in 1991, an aluminum panel was found on an island north of Samoa that some believe came from her plane. Now, researchers at Penn State U say they have used advanced imaging techniques to reveal hidden letters and numbers on the panel, which could help confirm that Earhart had landed on that island. Very interesting, isn't it? See where that goes. 13 minutes past the hour. Hope you're having a great Thursday morning, December 1st, a new month, moving toward the very end of 2022. Can you believe it? We're glad you're tuned in to EWTN and so excited to have Dr. Matthew Bunsen on with us. He's up next, and we'll be talking about what the Pope had to say about women priests and diving more deeply into why the church teaches what she teaches. Stay tuned.
CMF Curo is a Catholic healthcare ministry providing families nationwide with a better solution centered around whole health, spirit, mind, and body. Our members share their medical burdens within a faith-filled community. At CMF Curo, our members have access to a spiritual director, concierge services, and other health and spiritual resources. Find out if CMF Curo is a better solution for your family. Visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for almost 20 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company, and it's sent millions of dollars to thousands of pro-life charities. 5G coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. Live chat and a video introduction are available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I went to Las Vegas years and years ago for one of these cable shows. And I was shocked to see all these old ladies in their 70s and 80s getting off that plane, running for a slot machine. You don't have a chance to win. They're all fixed. I know, my uncle used to have slot machines.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Issue that still really, I think, bothers some people. They just don't understand it. They just don't understand, and many of those are within the Catholic Church, and I've also heard from people outside the Catholic Church, why can't women be priests? That just seems so unfair and so sexist. Well, the Holy Father addressed this earlier this week in an interview that was published by American Magazine, very strongly explaining why women can't be priests and why it's not a bad thing. Talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, I know he has a lot to say about this. He has a lot of experience in explaining church teaching, really needs no introduction, and has been with us at EWTN for dozens of years, actually I think just over 20 years now, contributing to EWTN News, being one of our top news people, and also, of course, being a PhD, producing so many amazing documentaries on church history and also the saints. So Matthew, this is a topic I really love to talk about, despite the controversial subject matter of women priests and all you know, the discussion that's gone on over the especially the recent decades, I would say. But I think the Holy Father really did a very good job of outlining very strongly why women can't be priests, explaining the charisms that are involved here and why this is so true. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's great to be with you. Yeah, the Holy Father, I think, in his interview with American Magazine, as is often the case with Francis, he simply reiterated some of the key principles of Catholic teaching. And, of course, as we have seen consistently throughout his pontificate, whenever he does this, many in the progressive left, especially progressive Catholic media, they tend to ignore what he says or kind of dismiss it. And I think we have seen a lot of focus in this interview on what the Holy Father says about Ukraine and racism and other things and polarization, but there has been scant attention paid to what he said in terms of the Marian and Petrine dimensions or principles at work. And in that sense, I think Francis once again is being misrepresented by those with their own agenda. And I think that's really important to stress whenever he does an interview like this.
They seem just not to accept the fact, and with the sources that you're mentioning, that the Pope, I mean, there's a lot of things, issues that come up that we question, and we kind of look at things and say, oh, that's very interesting. Don't maybe not understand what he means. And that seems kind of, you know, a little bit odd or off or whatever. But what he, again, in this interview, we also talked about abortion, and he used that same phrase referring to abortion as hiring a hitman to solve a problem. But what I really liked, and at least I'm glad that the American Magazine said this in terms of him describing the Marian nature and how women, we have this discipline in the church, the Marian discipline and the Petrine discipline, so understanding what that means. And I can remember years ago having a discussion with a local anchor person when I was on the news with him about some Catholic issue we were discussing, and he was so upset that I couldn't be a priest because he's been following me and he really likes what I do. He's like, I'm just so sorry you can't be a priest, and you should do it. And I looked at him and I finally said, why are you so consumed with equality being sameness? And he just looked at me. He said, I never thought about it that way.
That's right.
Yeah. We're created equal but different.
That's right. And I think the Holy Father's hit on something very important here. Now, we can dig into it a little bit in the sense that he's talking about key principles, but it's not exclusive to Francis. We have seen this, especially in the writings of Hans Urs von Balthasar.
Right.
We have seen this, of course, in John Paul II and Benedict XVI. So this isn't something that's unique to Francis or that he's coining some phrase. In fact, the ideas of the Marian dimension and the Petrine dimension we can find in the Catechism itself. You can go to, I think, paragraph 773, in which it talks about the fact that the Marian dimension of the Church precedes the Petrine. Now, that doesn't reduce anything in terms of the Petrine dimension, but let's also remember that when we're talking about the Petrine dimension, It has been described in many ways as a kind of service of St. Peter and his successors, that has to be stressed, toward the building up of the church and of the life of faith in the church, the living of communion and charity and the unity of the church. And then we look at the Marian dimension, which itself has many aspects. There's the ecclesiological, the anthropological, the Christological, but it really has as its great model, Mary, is the Virgin made church, as one professor wrote. So in that sense, there is that complementarity that we need to always maintain. And the functioning of one dimension presupposes the church living out the other. So we can't have one without the other. And I think that's one of the points that Francis is trying to make here.
Talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen from EWTN, we're responding to the article, the interview that the Holy Father gave with American Magazine. Talks about many things, including the very, still in some circles, controversial topic of women possibly being ordained priests, which he affirmed cannot happen. I thought what was very poignant is the way the question was raised. Many women feel pain because they cannot be ordained priests. What would you say to a woman who is already serving in the life of the church, who still feels called to be a priest? So in other words, if I feel called to do something, then you should be able to address that right away and answer my call and my need and my will and my desire for my life.
Right. In exactly the same way that we're seeing today. So if a man feels that he is called to be a woman, why can't we simply recognize that? Or if a woman feels that she should be a man, why should we not cater to that? So it's the same idea of, in this case especially, of tearing the church down and rebuilding the church in the image that we want rather than the one that Christ actually gave
exactly.
us.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's something that Francis, I think, is very gentle about. But he does reiterate again these dimensions that have to be understood and lived. And in some ways, it's such a disservice to women. And I'm reluctant, of course, to speak for women, but I think you understand what I'm getting at. It is such a disservice on the part of those who are advocating for the ordination of women, particularly priests and theologians, in denying what is reality theologically, ecclesiologically, of what the church can and cannot do. And it is that refusal to recognize and accept what the church can do and cannot do that I think has led to so much confusion and mm-hmm. anger, which we also saw during the Second Vatican Council, when there were these blanket promises of things that even those who were making them knew were not possible. And I think it has led to decades now of confusion and frustration on the part of some. And I think the clarity that John Paul II tried to bring, Benedict has tried to bring, and now Francis is trying to bring, are essential.
It is. He makes a point that it has to be discussed further, and we have to have this theology of women. He talked about that early on in his papacy, and I think that is so true. This is why there's so much confusion, is because I don't think we've explained it clearly enough for people.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we can look at the most recent reflections on that. I think, for example, on John Paul II's magnificent letter on the dignity and vocation of women. Mulieris Dignitatem helps us to understand that all the baptized, priests and laity, are the church, that the bride of Christ, but they all have roles. And there is that dimension, the series of dimensions that we have to recognize. But we do need to have a proper understanding of women, which itself has been, I think, so blurred in recent decades. Now we can layer on even the confusion that feminist theologians have provided with the now heated battles over gender, where we have mm-hmm. lost not only the capacity to understand the proper roles of women, the beautiful and important roles of women, but also, what is a woman? If we can't answer that basic question, then we're even farther removed from an ability to explain properly what we mean by Marian and Petrine dimensions.
Right,
of the
exactly,
church.
Exactly. Talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about the Pope's interview recently in American Magazine, what has been the response, you alluded to this a little bit in the beginning of the interview, from those who are really still pushing for the ordination of women in the church?
Well, there was a bit of a hostile one outlet I won't name, it's not from giving them that sort of airtime, said that Pope Francis was mansplaining why women can't be ordained. So it is the kind of dismissive approach that we see in progressive media, that when Francis says something or seems to do something that they support, they celebrate it. But when he doesn't, again, they either ignore it or try to craft their own responses to it that sidestep the fact that this is supposed to be their champion for progressive causes. We have seen this consistently now in this pontificate.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. More with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Really appreciate taking his time out of his busy day to kind of really walk us through these beautiful teachings of the Church. And I really encourage both men and women to read the documents of John Paul II, especially Mulieris Dignitatum, on the dignity and vocation of women, and the papal letter to women. Open your eyes on the beautiful teachings of the Church and how important women are in the Church. And it doesn't mean they have to be priests. We'll be right back.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God, but I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a little lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have. And we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence. And in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live Truth. Live Catholic.
How important was unity to Jesus Christ? Very, according to the Catholic Catechism. He bestowed unity on His Church at the outset. It is something the Church can never lose, but with prayer and work, she can improve. This is why, the Catholic Catechism says, Jesus Himself prayed at the hour of His Passion and continues praying, that they may all be one. As You, Father, are in Me, and I in You, may they also be one in us. The Catechism further states, the desire to recover the unity of all Christians is a gift of Christ and a call of the Holy Spirit. The Catechism says there are certain things required in order to respond adequately to this call. A permanent renewal of the Church, conversion of the heart, prayer in common, fraternal knowledge of each other, ecumenical formation, dialogue among theologians and Christians, collaboration in good works. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Having a great conversation with the very own Dr. Matthew Bunsen from EWTN, and he is just amazing. And Matthew, your bio is way too long to read it on the air, but how many books have you written now?
55.
55 books.
But well, I always joke that I go for quantity over quality, you know.
No, your books are amazing. My goodness. How long have you been at EWTN now?
Well, in an official capacity for 7 years. So it's a joy.
But you've been working with them for much longer than that, though, correct?
Oh, yes.
I mean, indirectly, yeah. Doing all kinds of specials. Well, we so appreciate your gifts and your talents and your knowledge of the faith, including helping us understand the beauty of why the Church teaches what she teaches regarding ordination. You know, it's interesting, Matthew. I never, even in my radical feminist days in college, I still identified as a Catholic, even though I wasn't going to Mass on a regular basis. But for whatever reason, I never had an issue with the women priest thing. And my spiritual director told me, we were talking about that one day, and he said, well, it's probably because the Eucharist, I got the Eucharist at a very young age. I don't know what it was. It certainly wasn't a head knowledge or theological knowledge, but I just understood that that was Jesus. And he said that love of Jesus in the Eucharist was helping you in some way, even though you were not quite there yet, recognizing Church teaching. And I thought about that and prayed about that for a while, and I think that's true. And I also think once we embrace and we have that encounter, truly have that encounter with Christ, and I'm not saying that those who are still pushing for women's ordination are not believers, but when we have that true surrender, we are willing to say, okay, I may not agree with this, But this is what the church is telling me, and I first at least need to dive in more deeply to see what this is all about before I make my opinions and insist that I'm still right and I have this feeling that I want to do this, that, or the other thing.
I mean, absolutely. It's a question of acceptance. It's a question of setting aside what we want. And this is true for our lives, having the wisdom to understand what God actually wants for us rather than what we want, and being obedient to what we discern to be God's will. And that process of discernment is always the key, because I can discern a lot of things, but if I'm discerning and forming my conscience very poorly, I'm going to reach conclusions that are also equally poor.
Right.
And I think one of the things that you understood is the fact that the two are not supposed to be in conflict. I think Pope Francis said it really well when he said that the woman does not enter into the ministerial life is not a deprivation. And it's a nice use of that word. Yeah. He says, no, your place is that which is much more important and which we have yet to develop. And you touched on this a little while ago. Mm-hmm. The catechesis about women in the way of the Marian principle. And in that, he's echoing not just von Balthasar, but very directly John Paul II. His observation in a speech he gave to the Roman Curia back in 1987, where he talks about that the two are not rivals. As he says, the link between the two profiles of the church, the Marian and the Petrine, are profound and complementary. And he said, this is so even though the Marian profile is anterior, not only in the design of God, but also in time, as well as being supreme and preeminent, richer in personal and communitarian implications for individual ecclesial vocations. Now, that's a mouthful, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's expressing so perfectly the idea that it is profound, it is complementary. And one of the examples that's often given is the marriage at Cana, where we see that principle in practical terms playing out with the role of Mary asking Christ, calling on Christ to do this miracle. And that relationship that we see between the Blessed Mother and Christ, I think, is such a perfect model for us. Here we have Mary as that first and great disciple.
And what does she say? Do whatever he tells you, right?
Yes. And that's at the heart of it, to do what he tells us. He has told us very clearly what he wants us to do, but are we going to set aside our pride and actually listen?
I wrote a chapter about this in my book, Extreme Makeover. I went into great detail about it, and I looked at all the different positions that women have in the church and how high they are up in the church. But I also said there's a misunderstanding, because we still see the priesthood, bishops, the ecclesial area of the church as an issue of power versus service. And I think if we understand that it's not about power, it is about service, then our attitudes hopefully could change as well.
Well, yeah, and that goes back to the very proper understanding of that Petrine dimension, that it is it expressed as the service of St. Peter and his successors. And it is not simply wielding power, but it is one of service. And I think this is where, too, an event such as we're seeing with the German synodal path. We just had the Germans doing their ad limina visits, the German bishops. And that phrase that really stayed with me was from, I think it was Bishop Georg Batzing, who's the president of the German Bishops' Conference. He was talking about, he took great umbrage at the idea that this is somehow a problem. And he said, well, we want to be Catholics. We are Catholics, but of a different kind.
Yeah, what does that mean? Catholics of a different kind.
Well, I think what he's getting at, and this is to the very heart of the problem, that, well, we claim to be Catholics, but we're Catholics in our own way. Rather than being obedient to the teachings of the church, we don't like certain things about what the church teaches and holds and asks of us, so we're simply going to go our own way while still claiming to be Catholics. So we are Catholics, but Catholics in a different way. That has never worked in the history of the church, and it certainly isn't going to work here. And to his great credit, Francis again continues to call on them that we've already seen this before. There is as he put it, a perfectly good evangelical Lutheran church in Germany. We don't need a second one.
Right, right. Again, I think at the end of the day, it's very simple. As it says in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. It doesn't mean that we don't question and we don't investigate, but Where is this coming from? Where are these teachings coming from? Who is saying this? The Pope didn't make this up. This Pope didn't make it up. John Paul II didn't make it up. Benedict didn't make it up. John the 23rd didn't make it up. This was passed on from the beginning. And if we sit down and we read what the Church has to say on these issues, that's why I think this whole idea, when he first was questioned about this at the beginning of his papacy, where people really believed in the media this was going to happen, that women were going to be ordained priests under Francis, and they must be like totally stunned and very disappointed so many years later. He mentioned this developing a theology of women, and I don't think we've done that well enough yet.
But he also said, and this was one of the most forceful phrases of his pontificate, he said, the door is closed to the ordination of women, to the priesthood. He said, the door is closed.
Yep.
Now, we continue to see these hanging around the margins of this ongoing discussion of deaconesses. We saw it raised during the Amazonian Synod. We've seen it mentioned a few other times. It is the desire of those or some who are going to participate in the Synod on Synodality to raise it again. We have seen it also in many of the documents, including the most recent one on the continental phase of the Synod on Synodality. So it is likely to be a topic come October of next year when they have this first part of the Synod on Synodality. So we need to be prepared for that. And I think they see that as the door, that once we can figure out a way in their mind to have some form of a deaconess, that they'll be able to push forward toward the more formal ordination of women to the priesthood. And Francis, I think, once again, in this interview, is saying, no, that is not possible. But the problem is I don't think that the many on the progressive side are willing to listen.
Another document before we wrap up I would recommend, and I don't do Latin very well, but it's a 1994 document of John Paul II. It's Ordinatio Sacerdotalis, and it explains and affirms what Paul VI said. Very, very good document about this whole issue. Matthew, always great to catch up with you. If I don't speak with you before Christmas, buon Natale to you, but hopefully we will speak soon. Great work, of course, of Dr. Matthew Bunsen at EWTN. Stay tuned. More Catholic Connection coming up.
Sixty on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The fifth commandment, you shall not kill. At the heart of this commandment is an absolute insistence on the sacredness of human life. We read in Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, before I ever formed you in the womb, I knew you, says the Lord. So every human life is sacred because it's caught up in the mind and the heart and the will and the love of God. And no matter how we're conceived or any circumstances, God has always known and loved every human person. And for this reason, we are to hold sacred every human life. We are, therefore, to never murder, never kill, never seek vengeance. Of course, we have issues of abortion and euthanasia today, and we have so many ways where we in some way disrespect the lives of other human persons, and even our own life. We have to learn to respect it as a great gift from God. The fifth commandment, you shall not kill.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When was the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
I've heard the news just recently, the U.S. Senate passing the so-called Respect for Marriage Act, which contains some very significant threats to religious freedom. And that's why we have Brian Birch, president of Catholic Vote, on with us this morning. Brian, happy Advent. This is very, very, very concerning. The bishops have been speaking out about this, and I know that you've had several efforts on your website and within your audience and your outreach. What is this looking like now for us as Catholics specifically? Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, and good to be with you. You're absolutely right. This is a very worrisome. The Senate did pass this bill, and of note, they passed the bill without the needed protections for religious liberty, protections for Catholics, protections for Catholic schools, charities, businesses. That bill will now head to the House. It's likely to be passed in the same form quickly, and then, of course, signed by President Biden with a lot of fanfare and celebration, unfortunately. What this looks like is, I think, an escalation on what we've already seen in the gender war, the gender revolution that we're witnessing, and that is, this is not merely a question about the definition of marriage, or even, you know, whether or not someone can marry the person they love and what they claim. Instead, it is about a long assault on the institution of marriage itself. And so this is really kind of even bigger in many ways than the kind of the religious liberty question we've been debating. It's really about the role of marriage and whether or not we as a society, as a culture, as an American people will continue to prioritize and hold in esteem this institution that's been the bedrock of Western civilization.
So you're saying in your statement, this is an effort by those seeking to silence our voices in the public square. So what do you foresee now that this is passed in the Senate and looks as if it is going to be passed quickly, as you mentioned, in the House?
Well, how the bill will work will essentially define for federal legal purposes the definition of marriage. And that means any time the federal government interacts with any institution, business, charity, whether it be with a regulation, whether it be with a grant, if Catholic Charities, for example, partners with the federal government, as it already does, receives millions of dollars to care for the vulnerable, the homeless, obviously immigrant services, all of these interactions with the federal government will now be subjected to legal question. That is, can this partner with the federal government continue to maintain its belief in the institution of marriage, traditional marriage, and still be in compliant with federal law? Now, of course, some of these grants don't implicate that question, but we've already seen the kind of the march of the LGBT activists toward not just the specific question, but whether or not the institution itself is legally impermissible, and holding this impermissible position and therefore disqualified to do anything with the federal government. This includes, by the way, the potential for tax-exempt status to be subjected to legal scrutiny now.
So what can we do in response to this? We can't just sit here and take this.
Well, there's a lot of, obviously, responses. We're going to need another Congress to pass some new protections. I don't think we're going to get, let's call it a Dobbs-like marriage decision, for example, anytime soon, that's going to kind of wipe away all of this nonsense. That's what we'd love to get eventually. But we are going to need, and it's not out of the question, because a lot of this bill did not pass but for 12 votes from Republicans as well, all of which claimed that the fears that we have put forward are unfounded. But as they begin to materialize, and I'm have no doubt whatsoever that they will, then the pressure is going to be on them to come back to the table and to reintroduce some new protections. Obviously, the Supreme Court is the ultimate backstop, and some of these cases will wind their way to the Supreme Court. And as it stands today, thanks to President Trump, we do have a very robust court when it comes to religious liberty. That said, this was a law passed by Congress, and even this conservative court is very deferential to the legislative branch of government. That's what they did in the Dobbs decision. They didn't impose the pro-life position. They said, we will leave this to legislatures. And so we're in a little precarious position here, and sometimes I guess it needs to get worse before it can get better. Before people can wake up.
Yeah. Talking with Brian Birch, the president of Catholic Vote, regarding the so-called Respect for Marriage Act. And Brian, this is so true with everything those on the far left do, especially when it comes to life and these issues. They call it the Respect for Marriage Act because then people say, oh, well, that sounds nice. We want to respect marriage, right?
Absolutely. The debate is often clouded in euphemisms and phony language in order to win the public over. And And this is a perfect example. This is the, as we like to call it, the Disrespect for Marriage Act.
Right.
There's
right.
no such thing. It actually destroys marriage. It destroys institutions or businesses or individuals that believe in marriage. And so, yeah, I like to, you know, we've been fighting this for the last several weeks, and unfortunately, it looks like we're gonna lose this one temporarily. But I keep saying, also, we as Catholics have to remember this beautiful gift of marriage that we believe in, and that it's not just this kind of religious idea that we kind of do as our little Amish thing on the side of society. This is central to the stability of our country and our culture.
Of our existence.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're in this kind of new experiment in human history of whether or not we can gut this foundational unit, this foundational social unit, and still bring children into the world, nurture them, raise them, teach them to be responsible, not give them a mother or father, and then hope it works. And I don't think the signs are very good right now. And I think we have to continue to point to that, that this is not just this kind of a radical old idea that we've now, science has allowed us to move beyond. This is something that is foundational, and without it, the consequences could be grave.
Well, connected to this, of course, and by the way, if you're just tuning in on Catholic Connection on a Thursday morning, we're talking to Catholic Vote President Brian Birch about the so-called Respect for Marriage Act passing in the Senate and likely to pass very quickly in the U.S. House as well. You talk about foundational issues. I mean, the foundational issue is how we were created, male and female, in the image and likeness of God. That's totally been thrown out the window, for the most part, by the culture. And so why should we be surprised that this other foundational issue of marriage, which is directly related, is not continually under attack?
Right. Well, they've certainly tried to throw it out the window. I like to say they will never throw it out the window because nature has a
well, but they're attempting to, and they're suppressing. What I mean by that, and you're absolutely right, but what I'm saying is that that's somewhat sarcastic, obviously, because what they're doing is they're suppressing the stories about these people who have gone through these so-called transitioning surgeries. And there's so many more of them coming out with their stories, talking about how horrific it was and how that wasn't the answer. And then you have these major centers in Europe, both in Great Britain and I believe it is Norway, where they shut them down because of the damage that was being done, because they realized that there were some whistleblowers who said, this isn't working, so of course it doesn't work, but they want to make us think that.
They're absolutely right. And this is, it's so good of you to bring this up, because this is all connected. This debate about the Respect for Marriage Act is not just about the narrow question of whether or not we will allow same-sex people to get married and whether we'll, what kind of liberties we'll allow religious people to have. It's in this broader foundational social question about how we will bring children into the world, how we will respect the biological science that we've always known to be true, that is clear and common sense tells us to be true. And then how we will raise them and what sort of ideas we will enculturate them with around the idea of their, you know, sexual beauty. And this is it is so important that we get this right and that we stop this train that we're on before it heads off the cliff. Because, as you cite, in this transgender challenge that we have, we're seeing all sorts of consequences now bubbling up, whether it be suicide rates or people regretting their decision. And this is just the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think there's probably going to be, class action lawsuits at some point with people who were, you know, pressured to do this, or with the psychologists who are saying the minute someone comes to them and says they have a particular frustration and it directs them in the way of transitioning or whatever. So do you think we have some hope with the fact that now we have a Republican-controlled Congress, but then again, 12 Republicans in the Senate voted for this thing?
They do, but the public's still on our side when it comes to religious liberty. No one wants to see the Little Sisters of the Poor being bludgeoned yet again, and this is exactly what this will do. And so I think we have to expose the consequences of this legislation and the defects in it, come back to the Congress. Obviously, it's going to take another president, so we're looking at, you know, 2-4 years away before something like this would happen, but some of these challenges are going to have to wind their way through, and we're going to have to build public support against what the other side is doing with this, and of course, make the case to the American people. And I still believe, and evidenced by the parents at school board meetings and a lot of the, you know, even the debate on this bill, by the way, Democratic Senator Kristen Sinema said, who's, you know, not on our side on this, said, she has never seen more resistance on a bill than this bill. And so that tells you that the public isn't buying into this, full bore here. We still have momentum. We barely lost this, like a lot of these things. But like Dobbs, you stick at it, you dig in, you stay in the trenches, you keep working hard, and you slowly build back. And that's kind of, the story of our faith in this Valley of Tears,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in terms of what else we can do, because you gave us a brief summary there, what are some specific things that we should be doing now to stand up against what has happened with this particular issue regarding the so-called Respect for Marriage Act?
Well, the first thing I would say is these Republicans that voted for this bill need to hear from you.
Right.
Yes, they vote; their vote is done, and so they can't go back and change it. But they need to feel heat. They need to feel pressure. They need to know that there was a problem here. And so when we do come back to this Congress, whether they are there or not, a number of them are retiring, and that's why they voted this way, they know that their vote was the cause of this. Those senators are listed on our website. You can go there. You can make a quick phone call. The other thing, again, kind of the bigger picture, we need to constantly go back to the celebration of marriage, promote marriage, celebrate people who are married. The left has this long view of how to break down this whole idea of marriage in our culture, and they hate anything and anyone that celebrates this institution. They believe it to be a source of oppression and sexism, patriarchy, et cetera. And I think to win the long battle, we have to continue to push those subtle ways, albeit however small, in your own family, in your own culture, in your own community, in which marriage was celebrated and marriage was held in esteem, and talk to your children and celebrate and make a bigger deal about anniversaries. It's just those little things that help rebuild a marriage culture that we need to be focused on too. Yeah. Not just the political questions, of course, that's important. But also the broader celebration of marriage within the culture itself.
I really appreciate all the work at Catholic Vote. What keeps you going? You and I have known each other a long time, and you do amazing work, and it just continues, and you're very strong. But sometimes I think we all feel like we're a punch drunk, though, you know? In the middle of the ring, we keep getting knocked down. We keep, like, one of those clowns with the big feet, you punch them, and we keep getting back up again, right?
Well, I'm human just like you. I have my days. There are times when I think, oh my gosh, this is so discouraging. I should just, go bury my head in the sand. But then
right. You
have days like this summer, Dobbs decision.
Right.
Who would have thought 2, 3, 5 years ago we'd be saying that?
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of children are living today as a result of that.
Amen.
And so there's those times when you realize it is worth it. And, even when you're losing, these are opportunities to offer them to God and to build that strength that our faith gives us. Because at the end of the day, it's not up to us.
Right. No.
And there's no other way to sustain kind of sanity and hope without our faith. And so,
yeah, amen.
You do this as a Catholic, and that makes all the difference.
Amen. And I think, too, at the end of the day, and you and I know this so well, that this is one of the reasons why you do what you do and we do what we do here at Ave Maria and EWTN. It's about introducing people to Jesus. It's first and foremost about that encounter. I have something in one of my books, Beyond Sundays, the 3 M's of faith: meeting, mercy, and mission. You meet the Lord, you fall in love with him, he shows you his mercy, and then you go on mission. And then, this is a pilgrimage. Now, as that old country song says, I never promised you a rose garden. That happens to be very scriptural. Brian, great to talk with you. Keep up the great work. Hopefully look forward to seeing you down at the March for Life. We'll be right back on a Thursday to let you know what's coming up on a Friday. Catholic Vote, a great organization. Check out their work, catholicvote.org. We'll be right back.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Those who deny the full humanity of the preborn will be toying with the sentiments of pro-life people. They will say, you can't really believe in the humanity of the unborn unless you support this or that piece of legislation. The pro-life position is quite different. We might well believe that we need to improve social conditions. But first of all, we believe that the preborn are a good to be protected, even if born into poverty, even if born into unstable, violent homes. We want to eliminate those terrible conditions, but it is the height of arrogance to tell human beings like unborn children who cannot communicate or reason or stand up for themselves that they are better off dead, because we know from our own experience that we would choose life and survival over death, no matter how poor our social environment.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Thanks so much for tuning in to EWTN, the one and only, EWTN.com, and of course, co-produced by Ave Maria Radio, AveMariaRadio.net. Coming up tomorrow, don't want to miss our Inside Word with the one and the only Doug Keck. I always enjoy our conversations. He's our Chief Operating Officer and President, giving you a sneak peek at what's coming up in our great programming. And then a look at Eucharistic miracles with a new BFF of mine, Dr. Scott French from California. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.